And Alex, I was asking, do you actually see this magazine? It's councillors, I'm told, but there's something in it of interest, I think.
I'll open mine then, Jack.
Yeah, open. page 11, Renew Now High Street, it says. That you can... Michelle and Alex, you can borrow it, copy it if you want. Right. At the end of the meeting, I'm going to ask for the confidential item to be discussed. At the moment, there's nobody here, so it is something that is supposed to be noted at every meeting, and we don't seem to be having it mentioned on the agenda. But it's mentioned on the next works programme. It's on the programme on the 30th of June, but I want to have a talk about it on the at the end of this meeting in confidence. All right. Okay then. We'll start the agenda. Minutes of the 14th of December, as published on the council's website. Somebody moved that they're agreed. Right, thank you. Well, I've signed them. Apologies. I know there is an apology.
Yes, it's Councillor Cross who's substituted this evening by Councillor Edgeler.
Nice to see Councillor Edgeler. Right, nice to see you. You've got your drink as well. Right, and it says public question time, nil. Sorry, you're supposed to say that. Councillor session.
That's nil.
Members item.
That's nil.
Called in items.
And there are none.
Right, we move then to page 3, section 7A, and it is Alex. Righto, Alex, it's over to you. An update on section 106.
Thank you very much, Chair. So what we have is a report here that sets out two main updates in terms of section 106. Just to remind members, section 106 is legal agreements that come into force when development is approved, and then the money comes to not just the borough council on some elements, but also to the county council to deliver infrastructure relating to those particular developments. So it's particularly important that the money is directed to the correct council and spend on the relevant projects as set out in the section 106 agreement. So with that sort of brief introduction, this report covers the monitoring, review and securing of funds that come to the council, and making sure that those funds are then directed to the correct projects that the borough council are overseeing. And then the other part of the report is providing an update on actually the delivery of projects themselves and how that process works. So if we turn firstly to the detail of the processing of the projects, we've got the section 106 is come through, and this is shown in more detail through appendix 1, which is on page 7, and as you can see, there's quite a number of processes that is on that flow chart, and that includes not just the development department but finance and legal departments as well to make that happen. Appendix 2 is more of a focus on the project delivery. And there's a difference in terms of projects. So there will be some projects that where they're less than £50,000, and what's been agreed by the Cabinet years ago was that those funds could be delegated to the Head of Development to make a decision in terms of those projects coming forward. And an over £50,000, that is required by a cabinet decision. So that sort of identifies the difference between the two lots of projects that the council deals with. And as you can see, there's a detail in terms of actually what happens when how the projects move forward and are then delivered. The Cabinet made the decision back in July 2019 that the projects would come forward in chronological order. So obviously those when the money is received by the council, then the approach is to spend whatever money is likely to run out first. So we have a 10-year window in order to deliver projects and spend that money. I think it's worth noting that there is some work that's ongoing in terms of the sort of back office side of things, if you like, to actually look at a system called XCOM, where the Section 106 agreements are actually uploaded and processed onto that system, so we can keep a regular check of how much money we've received from the developments, and then what it's spent on. And the government's been quite wants to be aware of this as well. And so in the last couple of years, we've produced infrastructure funding statements which cover the last two financial years in order to show what money has been received and what it's been spent on and the project pipeline. So I think that's a brief overview of the report. So I'm happy to try and answer any questions if I can. But in terms of, the individual cases and individual projects, I might not have that information immediately to hand, but I can certainly come back to members if there are any queries or questions that I'm not able to answer this evening. Thank you.
Right. You've gone through it now, that's Alex. Alex?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, now I'm going to do it page by page. You can put your hands down, and when we get to the page, you tell me which page you want. We're on page 3. I've got Councillor Barron, Chris Barron, and Anne Edgela both put their hands up. So those are the ones I saw first.
Right, thank you, Chairman. I'm looking at the paragraph at the bottom of the page that says to improve the quality of life of young people, provide a safe, clean, attractive place to live and work, and encourage people to be engaged in developing strong communities that promote health and well-being. I have not yet seen any evidence on 106 where this actually promotes strong communities to start with, and health and well-being. I'm looking at my ward, all the large developments that are going through my ward. We haven't got any community facilities at all. In fact, we're taking them away. Health and well-being, what I've asked repeatedly, that health can be looked at, that we can have meetings with the CCG to see if we can help in any way, and nothing. So can somebody explain that to me?
Right. You want to deal with that one first? Remember, this is Forbridge Ward.
Yes.
Yep, sure. So the Section 106 can only be related to projects that are agreed when the planning applications come through. Within the report, it provides some examples under 4.7 of the types of projects that Section 106 agreements relate to. And that includes, you know, what could be arguably in terms of providing support for health and well-being around a small recreation open space, biodiversity, etc. You will notice that health is one area that you've mentioned, and at the moment there isn't sort of Section 106 money particularly targeted to support health services in the, you know, across projects in general. But clearly there are examples, you know, in terms of sort of the larger scale developments where health provision is made available. But in terms of standard Section 106, then it's not. But that issue is sort of picked up through the individual planning applications and the CCG.
So can I come back on that and say that as far as education is concerned, one development I recall, and it was mentioned at the meeting, was that the primary schools were catered for extra primary school places, but no high school places. Open space contributions, we haven't got open space, and they're actually taking it away. So could somebody please explain why that isn't happening now?
Right. I've actually got two cabinet members who wish to take part three, and at the moment it's the committee that's asking the questions.
I don't intend to ask a question. I was going to give a point of clarification on the question that Councillor Barron asked.
You may come to the table.
Thank you. Do you want to go to this first? Sorry, Chair.
We made an agreement at the last committee meeting. Councillor Frances Beattie can come to the table when she wants. All right? So bear that in mind. Okay,
can I give you the chair?
All right, come on then, Jeremy, it's all yours.
We just need to reframe the question that Councillor Barron asked. It's only clear that the health service has responsibility for health in a purest way. You know, the front door of the hospital is the responsibility of the health service. The responsibility for public health and well-being is all of our responsibilities. Everyone in the public sector, county council, borough council, and you name it, and everyone within the public sector has that responsibility. The way that plays out for the borough council is things like green open space, because when you talk about parity of esteem on mental health and physical health, actually a green open space is really important for development. So I think I would probably argue, and I'm happy to stick my neck out, I think I would probably argue there are plenty of 106 agreements for things like open space, plenty of 106 agreements. Maybe not in Forbridge, but you need to take development. If you take housing development, you get 106s. You know, you can't just get a 106 without housing development. So the two go hand in hand. So I would just be very, very careful and say, you know, there are leisure facilities for kids and families. You know, that's all about well-being and health. Maybe not in Forbridge.
And we've got two large developments.
Now, you have to speak up loud because this thing is recording you.
Sorry.
All right.
Sorry, can I just come back on that point? I think the point will be about viability assessments. And I think we as a council need to be stronger with developers who, you know, frankly, it's a bit like, who was he today on the BP man who says that his customers are cash machines. I think that was his quote. He's made super profits and, you know, all of us are cash machines. Well, frankly, developers, you know, I don't see a poor developer. I don't see them going bust. And we need to be more robust on viability assessments with them to ensure that we get the infrastructure that goes with the housing.
Trowbridge. Is this to do with this one? All right.
To do that exact comment of promoting health and well-being. I mean, some of the destination parks that have gone absolutely promote health and well-being. Yes, they really do. Victoria Park, which is on your doorstep, it does create a community as well. The feeling in there is just beautiful. There's people meet on the bandstand every Sunday. If you walk through, there's this great big meeting group now. People who meet at the bowling alley, at the bowling green, at the education centre. It's lovely over there. It does create communities, these destination blocks. I know it's not in your ward as such over where you're talking about, but it's still very local.
Yeah.
As
chairman through you, I'll go along with that. It is very local and it is central to the whole of Stafford.
Mm.
I am thinking of places such as areas where people could gather locally with their children, where they could go for. There's absolutely nothing. I know this is very briefly, fractional anyway, but I've been calling for a community centre of some sort. For years, nothing's happened. And it is really, really important that these people have somewhere to meet and not have to go into town to get those meeting places. And it is so important for people. And with these large developments and going a bit further out of town, especially the one on top of St. Mendes Avenue, you know, that's further out of town. And yeah, we're going to have to. Excuse me, Chairman, I've forgotten what it's called. the water
fairway.
Yeah, the fairway linking. But we're going to have that. But, you know, it isn't the
it
same.
It's beautiful what's going to happen over
the trail. And I'm looking forward to that. But it is still, we still need the taking away the. What was the county council football pitch? They're taking that away because it floods. So if that's going.
Right.
Where's that going?
They can do water polo.
Let's not discuss where it's going. It's going, and that was a point made. Right, now we go to Anne Edgler.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, I can relate back to the paragraph that Chris has just mentioned. And I agree with a lot of what she's saying, actually, because all right, sitting on the planning committee, I don't know, we've got two major developments taking place in that area, and I think that we're not getting enough money out of the developers to do things that we need to do in that area. Having said that, I mean, I want to relate it back to transport. And I say that because I read something today, and it's a question, actually, for Alex. And this is about 106 money. Now, we've got a major problem now at the south end of town with bus services. I know that doesn't sound like 106 money, but I read somewhere today that 106 money is propping up a bus service in Cannock that's been taken away. And I'm wondering where 106 money fits in with the borough with that. You know, if the county have got 106 money and they're using it to prop a bus service up, where do we sit in with it, please?
Well, I didn't know that example.
Well, I've read that today. It's very interesting seeing who was coming to this meeting.
Hang on, Jeremy's got his hand up again. Go on.
Am I allowed to come to the table? You sure you want Francis instead?
No, it's your turn. Go on. And by the way, when you talk about bus services, remember that Coton Fields and Common share a bus service that ends up at Bassage. And have been reduced.
Can I just say, Chairman, I relate to that paragraph because it says and work.
So that's right.
Buses, you can't get to town.
Right, let's listen to the cabinet member.
Just so we keep on the agenda of the borough council, which is where I think I am this evening. Just let me check. Yes, I am at the borough council this evening. Buses are generally the responsibility of the county council, so I'm going to stick and talk about the principle of 106 is. I'm going to talk about the principle of 106 is for bus routes. So sometimes there is a 106 agreement, for example, if a train station is removed. For example, Norton Bridge train station was removed as a stopping service, and they put on a bus service for a number of years, which was funded through 106. Second of all, they sometimes put on 106 agreements. I think they did it for Yarnfield Park, where there is significant housing development where there isn't an existing bus service. And you want to encourage people to take a variety of sustainable transport alternatives. So if there isn't a bus, you need to try and put a bus service on that will be very low usage, so it's not a commercially operated route. But it is hoped that after maybe 5 years, there will be sufficient demand that it will be a commercially viable route and doesn't require developer subsidy. The bus service you're talking about, I think, relates to Cannock, and it links in bus services into the town centre and into that new development where there are significant demand, and you wouldn't put a bus service on day one unless it was publicly subsidised. And it shouldn't be publicly subsidised because it's for the developer's benefit.
Thank you. Right. Okay.
Thank you for that. I've learned something today, and I find that very interesting because I'm having a meeting that comes.
Right. Now, page two. You're still on page three.
Yeah, but so basically before that, do we collect 106 monies up front now?
Michelle, hang on, wait a moment. Francis?
The monies are taken when development takes place, and it's triggered by an agreed, say, a number of 500 houses for a major development.
Just a minute. Because I mean, the times have gone bust on us, and we've had no 106 money. It's been years on some of the developments. Western, we didn't get any money out of when it went bust. It's a lot of them.
Now remember, you must speak up for the microphone bit. Michelle, was the answer given by Councillor Beattie sufficient, or do you want to improve on it?
And the only thing I was going to say is you won't find the same triggers in every application.
No,
because it depends on what the application is for, the size, but also everything Alex said before about Section 106 agreements have to relate to the development. So there has to be a justification for things. So, for example, you wouldn't expect to see open space being delivered after 20 houses on very large sites because there'd be no one there to use the open space. They're staged depending on the development.
It wasn't that. It was because it was brought in, and it was still in, because at one time it wasn't.
It's always been like that.
We're going to have Michelle, will you come to the table and bring another chair up in case Francis wants to come up as well.
I just stay there.
Jeremy, stick your hand up if you want to speak. Alright, now Michelle, go back to this conversation, all right? You say your bit, and then she'll answer.
No, it was only that. I know it's been brought in since, but is it still that we get money up front rather than wait till we go bust? No. And we lost an awful lot of money at one time.
So we cannot require a developer to pay money until the trigger that's been built into the 106 agreement, so the legal agreement that Alex told
you. Yeah, that's fair enough.
We cannot ask them to make that payment until that legal trigger has been hit. So that's not negotiable. And those triggers have been agreed in negotiation between the developer and the organisations that have asked for the contributions. So that could be us, it could be the County Council. And that's built into the agreement, and the agreement is then tied to the Planning Commission. So we can't then turn around and say, well, it says you're due to make the payment in 3 years, but we'd like the money now. We can't do that.
All right.
That's fair.
All right,
yeah,
Andrew.
So
okay. Now, anyone else on page three?
Can I just add a little bit to that, if you mind?
Yes, you may.
The best way to secure your 106 money is to make sure it's on site. Like Burleyfields, whoever was involved in the Burleyfields application, we managed to get the destination park on site. And then there's no issue. They're already building that destination park because they've got to. And that's the best way to secure it in planning meetings.
The chairman of planning is not here, but I'm sure that other people who are on planning will say, and I mean you're there
no, Jack, don't we?
A number of times, it is an actual fact. not brought up at planning. Michelle.
Okay, so there's a hierarchy. So our preference would always be that the developer delivers these things. So if you take affordable housing, so we tend not to ask for contributions for affordable housing, because you get much better value for money if the developer is building affordable houses than if we try to, because potentially we'd also have to find land to build the houses.
Yeah.
So it's very unusual that we get money for affordable housing. The same principle applies to everything else. So if there is room on a development scheme to build, for example, a destination park, then we will do. But the one that's within your ward, the Charnley Road, that was done off-site with a large contribution from the MOD.
Oh, I thought it was, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I heard it.
And that was Section 106 money generated from there. And we could use that to improve the facilities at Charnley Road. So, Councillor Trowbridge is absolutely right. Do it on-site if you can, but in some circumstances you can't, and that's where we take a commuted sum,
right,
which is where Alex then has to try and work out what the projects are to spend it within the time limits.
Right. Councillor Beattie.
Chairman, from the point of view of planning members, that's why the master plan process is so important on major developments. And the master plan comes before the individual applications where you've got major developments, and it's really important to scrutinise those with a tooth comb to make sure that we have got what we want out of them.
Right. Is that sufficient for you?
Yeah, I think I just want to come back in because, you know, sitting on planning, as you know I do, and highways, you know that when highways come along and they say, there's no problem, and we know there's a problem, we know we've got problems in that area, but because that guy sits there that lives 200 miles away and says, we've got no problem, we can't then put any conditions or anything or apply for any money. It's just, and this, I'm having a meeting actually at county about that, because it really annoys me that it's, we're not getting the money out of the developers that we should.
Sorry, Chairman, that's also another reason why the master plan process is so important, to try and iron out the routes of roads and so forth before the development goes ahead.
Hang on. Alex, are you going to answer that question, or you want to wait for the next one?
No, I'm happy to wait.
Okay. Councillor Jones?
It is, that is I. I was interested in that last comment. I've not been on the planning committee that long, but I can never ever remember a major planning application ending with discussion about 106 monies and the use of it. And I'm just wondering, when was the last time that actually happened?
Alex,
you
need to take this one. Yes, I've
clocked
a few more
committee hours. You have one or two.
Okay, so Section 106 agreements are often not signed at the point at which an application comes to committee. But what you will see is within the report for the major applications, it will say the open space contribution has been agreed as, and then it will quote a figure, and that's based on the calculation that's done by that technical officer, and the amount of affordable housing units is X because the housing manager has said that's what it is. And as part of the resolutions, planning committee will say approved subject to conditions and the completion of 106 agreement, and list what those obligations are. And that's really important, because what that means is the developer then can't try and negotiate a different position with those contributions, because the committee resolution is tying them to figures. There aren't huge amounts of them at the minute, so a lot of the monies that Alex is talking to you about are from schemes that went through outline planning 5, 6, 7 years ago, because you've got the outline stage, then you've got reserve matters, then you're waiting for them to get on site, and then they hit their triggers, and then the money comes in. So it's from a while ago, but we have had some, and we've also had cases where John has taken reports back to committee because the Section 106 agreement hasn't been signed, and he's asked for committee to make a new resolution to say, no, we can't agree this.
Can I just come back?
Yes, you can come back, and then it's Councillor Phillips.
Yes, yes. Sorry, Marnie, but I just wanted to get clarity. Is the bulk of the $4,605,000 associated with large developments then?
So
we've moved over a page.
Well, yeah, I was only doing...
Yes, all right, carry on.
So basically, it's developments over a certain number of houses, but it will depend on what the individual circumstances were. But for example, you won't have applications there that have got four or five houses because they're not big enough to generate the obligation. But what you can't do is kind of say, if it's 200 houses, the amount will be this. Because as Councillor Kirk mentioned before, some sites have viability assessments attached to them, and we legally have to follow what those viability assessments say. So that you can't kind of say, oh, if it's this many houses, it's this much money, because it depends on the individual site.
Right. Okay, finished.
Well, sorry, Jack, but I don't... Included in that 4.6 million, is there latent developments in major developments associated in there that can be identified?
Sorry, I'm not quite sure where they are on projects already identified can that be talked.
That you're waiting for developers to come up with schemes.
So the developers don't have to come up with the schemes. That's the point that Councillor Trowbridge was making. If you have a large site, we say to the developer, we expect to see your open space provision as part of this housing development, and that's where you see the play areas come about generally in the middle of the site and all the houses can get access to them.
And is that 106?
No, it's 106, but it's not contributions because the developer has an obligation to build that themselves. So we don't have to take money, we don't have to go and find someone to build it. But we have a legal obligation on the developer that they can't build the houses and then disappear. They've got to lay out the open space.
But that's not in the 4.6 million.
What we're talking about is all of those sites where we've asked for financial contribution, and the work that Alex's team do, and that lovely snaky diagram that's in the report, that sets out what we then do when those monies are identified.
Right, okay.
It's too difficult for me.
Yeah, I understand that. Wait until we get to the diagram. Right, now, Councillor Phillips, is this on the first page?
This is still in relation to this, and it's a little bit...
We haven't moved on to page four with you, then.
I am on page four, yes.
We're on to page four, okay.
I'm on page four.
You're next. You're, I've got
to
cross there, Dean.
To what my fellow councillor was also kind of talking about. So, when we're at the point where we've agreed the 106, but then they don't decide to build for another 10 years on that site, their profits have skyrocketed. So are we not then in a position to be able to renegotiate the 106 money, considering we get tied sometimes with an agreement that is lesser than we would like to see? So
I'm smiling at our colleague from finance because something that we build into every 106 agreement, and Alex has fun with this every time someone says, how much do I need to pay, is that the payments are index linked.
Yeah.
So where there's a lag between the date of signatory of the 106 and the point at which the payment becomes due, and then if there's a delay in the payment, we can index link that. But what we can't do is say, oh, well, actually, the value of this has changed. But I think what you're saying is, if someone hasn't implemented the planning commission, well, if they haven't started on site, then the planning commission will lapse.
All right. We move now, then. D,
it's
your turn.
Yeah, following on 4.3, and it's got 3.2 million. What projects are in the pipeline?
So that 3.2 million, that includes maintenance payments, so when a project is delivered, then there's maintenance payments that carry through. The majority of those projects that are in the pipeline are split. Obviously, you can see that there's the 1.4 is for a number of the open space and leisure projects, and then there are some additional projects that we're waiting for the money to come through that fall into that 3.2 million. But in short, that's the projects are related to the borough council rather than rather than going to the counties.
Is there any way that we can see what they're related to or the wish list?
There's a list in terms of the 1.4 million, but at the moment we haven't got a list for the 3.2, and the reason for that is it comes back to populating the system that we've got. And so that's a project, the major project that my team is currently working on.
That's the XCOM.
Yeah, to input every Section 106 agreement into XCOM, to then be able to work with our colleagues in finance to actually identify exactly where we're up to with those projects and then provide an up-to-date list. So I can't give it to you today, but it's work in progress, and we will be coming back to you and providing you with that detail in due course. But it is quite a major project because it's coordinating across legal, the development department, and finance to pull that together. But yeah, we will come back to you in due course.
Right. Okay. Finished on that one. Phil Leeson.
Right. Okay. I think it's following on from your. The Borough Council is supposed to publish and maintain an up-to-date list of Section 106 agreements. Monies promised, monies received, and outstanding. And alongside is a summary of what all received monies has been spent on. I note from the second point under 4.2 that this is being worked on. When will this likely to be completed, and will this information be supplied to the ward councillors on a regular basis?
Okay, so the last 2 years the information is available because it's within the infrastructure funding statement. So for the last two financial years it's available, publicly available on our website. The historic information is something that we're working on. I can't give you a definitive date now about how long that will take, but what I can reassure the committee is that we do have staff in place who have got the specialist skills over the since September last year to actually update the system and make sure that can move forward and coordinate with our colleagues in finance and also legal to make sure that every single agreement and every single bit of money is been identified and included in the outturn report that will come. But the last 2 years we've got that available.
Okay. Right, can I before you carry on, Phil, just a minute. Can you make sure that all the members of this committee know how to get at that information?
Yes, I can send a link through.
You could send a link so that we can have a look at it.
Yeah, the infrastructure funding.
All right. Because that's a question I've got written down already.
Oh, right.
Okay, so carry on, Phil.
And will this information be supplied to the ward councillors so that they know the 106 money that's available in their ward and how it's progressing?
Yes, again, that would be part of the project. So engage with the ward councillors on the projects and have that conversation about when the money's received and then what the money is to be spent on. As I said earlier, we're working through it chronologically at the moment, but there's a draft template that we've also prepared to actually start those conversations and engage those conversations with the ward members. So that's something that will be picked up, and we've got this officer in place since October last year, the Leisure Policy and Implementation Officer, to do exactly that.
And this template will be circulated to councils for their approval and so on?
It's to engage in a conversation.
Yeah.
So it's what's really important is we want to find out exactly where the most up-to-date position in terms of projects and your views as members, as ward members on the projects. Clearly it needs to align with what's agreed in the Section 106 agreement, but those are live conversations that we now want to have with you.
Chairman, I think also just to add to that, I think it has to align with the Borough Council's policy as well. Am I right in that? I think I do. And therefore, you can't just come out with some random idea as a ward member. You've actually got to look at the borough council.
Yes, I appreciate that.
We'll take Michelle first.
Yeah, it was just to expand ever so slightly, the section 106 agreements should give an indication of where money should be spent and what it should be spent on. So for example, there's someone within Alex's team who will say, actually we need an under fives play area, you know, that's really specific stuff. Some of the older section 106 agreements didn't have some of that detail, and I think that's where some of the queries now come from, because they're quite broad. So what Alex has to do is kind of square the circle that is, this is what the ward members want to see, this is what the section 106 agreement was intending to do, and kind of fill in the gap. The more recent ones are much more specific and a lot easier.
Right, okay, you wanted to say something about that?
Exactly what Michelle has just said, actually. So she has said it, but we have already, we've always engaged with ward councillors anyway, as Jack will confirm. When Chanley Road was being done, he was involved in every step of the way. And yet he thinks the borough wasn't involved. Did I say that? Sorry.
Consultants did talk to us, and they also dug two holes, let it fill up with water, and then filled them in. Because we told them it won't work. Now, I've got a long list here. I've got Anne Edgler first, then Marnie, and then Mark Winnington, and then Gareth's coming again.
Just two questions, actually. We're told that we had a 106 officer employed by the borough. Is he working full time on this 106 money, and where it's being spent? And the other question is, and Bassage Ward, in this, I mean, it, £3 million or whatever, is the £130,000 sitting there that we promised from the police headquarters for Bassage Ward, please?
Okay, so
it's you to answer. So you're the officer.
Got to be
okay, Alex.
So, the Leisure Policy Implementation Officer has a number of duties. He works four days a week. And part of his role is to deliver Section 106 agreement projects that are under £50,000. The other main duties that he has is responding to planning applications, so to make sure that the open space and leisure contributions are actually included at the start of the process, to make sure that they can deliver the health and wellbeing approach for the borough. So then when the Section 106 money comes through and the project's then delivered, then he's got that end-to-end overview. And he's also got a role in terms of updating the playing pitch strategy and the indoor open space strategy. So he's not just working on the delivering Section 106 projects, but he does have other things to do as well.
Thank you.
Sorry, Anne, just to add to that, because Alex has spread his team too thinly. He does have another officer that works on the over £50,000 projects. So we're not talking about one person looking at Section 106 agreements, we're talking about two. So the new post has been brought in to basically deal with where the volume is in terms of sites, whereas the project manager is dealing with bigger sites that take up lots of time. So that's actually quite a lot of resource on Section 106.
Right, okay. And second question.
Hang on a minute, because I'm writing it down at the same time. That interested me.
And
so you've got another question? That's it. Okay, all right then. We're going to now.
The second question is about the 130,000, wasn't it? In terms of the police headquarters. So, again, we want to have a conversation with you about all relevant members about the delivery of the project that aligns with the Section 106 agreement, so spending the money in accordance with the legal agreement. And so, as I mentioned earlier, this draft template that's been prepared and will be circulated will enable us to sit down and actually get under the detail of that and talk through the timescales and exactly what the project will involve and where it will be delivered.
Thank you. Can we have a date in the diary then, please? Thank you.
No chance. Marnie is next.
Thank you. The Hexagon software, four members of the strategic planning and paper placemaking team are now trained to use the software. How has that proven to help you guys? Has it made a massive difference to your jobs?
The software has been purchased for a number of years, as Michelle has mentioned, we've got members of the team who are two members of the team who are looking at the project delivery, and we've also got a number of other officers in the team who can actually start populating the Hexagon system now, and we're really fortunate that an officer who used to work at Lichfield joined us in September, and she is an expert on Hexagon. And she has been working with other officers in the team to download every Section 106 agreement that's been signed, and that's now been done. Every Section 106 agreement has now been downloaded, and we've got it as a file. It then needs to be uploaded into the Hexagon system. There were about 200 to be uploaded, and we've currently got 130 have been uploaded in the last 3 or 4 weeks, and we've got another 70 to do. Right? Once all of those are uploaded, which hopefully, don't hold me to it, but hopefully towards the end of in the next month or two, that will all be done. Once they're uploaded, then we need to cross-reference with our financial information to actually find out, okay, well, this is how much money the Section 106 agreement says should be received. We then factor in the indexation bit that Michelle mentioned earlier. Then what we do is we then have to check with finance how much money we've actually received against each of those Section 106 agreements and for what. And then once we've got that information in place, we can then see, right, well, which projects then has got the money and can then be delivered. So it's quite a big...
It's time-consuming in the setup, but in effect you'll be able to have everything.
Then we will be into a routine. If that system will be regularly updated whenever a new Section 106 agreement is signed, it will be uploaded into the system. And then I anticipate that on a yearly basis, when we go out on site at year end and we actually look at what's been completed on site, after that we can then go back to the system and go, right, okay, we know that X number have been completed on that site, therefore there should be this amount of Section 106 that we've received, and then we can start chasing the developers in a comprehensive way and say, hang on a minute, you've built your 100 houses now, we were supposed to get this Section 106 money, we haven't got it, and an invoice and we'll get the money in. So yeah, that's where we're headed.
Just one more.
That's all right. Very quickly.
Thank you, Chairman. Just to say that I'm just really pleased to see that we've delivered 102 affordable housing units. That's another 102 families that have got homes, which I think is absolutely fantastic. And another 24 that have been secured, but that 102, I know we don't like developments per se. We don't like to see additional housing built, and everybody has a gripe at some point about it.
That's in the pages down here.
Many of these homes being built for people in desperate need, I think it's just fine. So thank you for that.
Yeah. You did move off a page. We're dealing with page four.
No, page four. 4.3.
Yeah, I'm reading that. It says 24 on my paper. Oh yeah, and I see the 102.
Yeah,
all right, you've got your hand up, Jeremy. What is it you want?
Can I just add a point of clarification on the Section 106 and the affordable housing? I think whilst the information is correct about linking affordable housing to 106, there is more affordable housing that is being delivered. So I would not want anyone in this committee to think that is all of the affordable housing we delivered last year, because it can be delivered in other ways.
Yeah.
The reality is we're delivering about 200 a year, which is in line with our needs and in line with what the local plan requests. Thank you.
It's on another page, that is, isn't it? Right, now, we've dealt with people from the town area. Now we're going to deal with somebody out in the rural areas. Councillor Mark Wellington.
I'll have you know, Marnie,
I was
early.
Yes, he was.
He noted. Right.
It's all yours.
Are we ready?
Yep.
Well spotted there, Chair. I was going to ask the question about parish councils, poorer councillors, possibly county councillors as well, but not mostly poorer and county. What's the hierarchy? How do they operate? Because I know with Nosal that they're quite sort of strong as a parish council. How do you sort of sort out parishes and ward members? And the second part of that question, which again is the outlying areas, I'm thinking more about Doxy. How do you decide to take 106 monies from an area like Doxy and put it into the town? Who makes that decision and how does it come by? So two questions there. And Chair, I've got some on page 5 as well. So
okay, so you want to answer those ones first?
Please.
All right.
So, in terms of where the money gets spent, so you have to go back to your basic principles of 106. So, the money is being collected as a planning obligation because it's directly related to the development. So, in very crude terms, if you're building houses, that's going to create people in the area, and those people are going to want, for example, a play area. So the play area should therefore relate to the development, which goes back to Carolyn's point about our preferences on site, because you don't get more related than that.
Yeah.
When that's not possible because, I don't know, you might have a really killy site or something like that and it just doesn't work, we then look within the ward. So as long as there's available land within which to do that, then we can do. If there isn't, that's when we then have to look at where is it reasonable to spend that money, where the people, the development that this has come from, has generated the money, will they be able to use that? So a good example is Victoria Park. So I think historically there were some developments within Doxy where some of the monies were directed to the refurbishment of the play area at Victoria Park because that was reasonably accessible to people from Doxy. Could you make the same argument that's reasonably accessible for people that live in Method? No. So that's where we have to take that very sort of pragmatic approach. Is this still relevant to the development that generated the payment? And generally speaking, most of the development that we have is centred around about Stafford. So if, for example, you had something within, I don't know, Common Ward, is it reasonable that someone could go to Manor? Yes, probably. But it, you know, you'd make sure there wasn't any availability to do something elsewhere first. You make sure you do the best possible with the money that you've got. In terms of the hierarchy, going back to the point about how specific the 106 agreements are, so you'll often find, Alex mentioned before, this new chaplain post is saying, I want to see X amount of money for the implementation of and maintenance thereof of an under 12s play area. That's really specific. That meets Alex's team's test that they're getting the infrastructure that's relevant to the size and type of development, and it's meeting John's tests that it's relevant to the decision that they're making. So that really narrows down where you're going to do that. So you wouldn't then, for example, say to a county councillor, what should we do with this? Because we already know exactly what it's going to be and to what value and within which ward. So I wouldn't expect to see Alex's team conferring with a county councillor to say, what should we do with this?
Yeah, well, that was just an aside.
But where the parishes come into their own kind of splits into two different groups. So we mentioned before that there are those projects that are smaller. Some parishes will say, we can deliver this project and we can probably deliver it faster than you. they would then have a more active role than the ones that know, for example, I'll use Victoria Park again as an example. I know there's not a parish, ignore that. But we know where this money's going to go. But my point is, they'll say, right, okay, we know where that's going. We're comfortable with that. And Alex might just get an email that says, yeah, absolutely happy with what you're doing. But it very much depends on where that money's going to be spent as to what degree involvement there is. I think, Alex, the ball is started by you reaching out to the parishes and saying, we've got this project coming up, what do you think?
So when the ward council's coming in that
at the same time.
Parishes and the ward members.
Yeah. So if you've got a situation, Chair, if you've got a situation where the ward councillor wants in another part of that area and the parish council wants it in one, that's the hierarchy I was talking about. What is then?
I think it's probably more sensible to look at it. What is the best use of the money that relates it to the development that's generated the money? It's not about hierarchy of who's got more dibs on how that's spent. It's absolutely going back to those fundamentals of what caused the money to become an obligation and where can we best spend it, get best value for the money. And other things that we'll take into consideration are things like how easily can we then maintain it. So it's like a whole package. It's not a case of, well, you're parish councillor, so you don't count as much as ward councillors view. It doesn't quite work out like that in practice.
Right, okay.
Can I just add a little bit?
Yes.
But you would be involved. That's the one thing.
Yeah.
If the parishes was a better scheme that fitted, you would still be involved every step of the way. That is absolutely nails through, because as a borough council, not county, borough.
Thank you for putting that in. That was what I was about to put in as well, as a borough councillor.
Another good example of this, but I'm going back to Burleyfields again, because obviously it's your area as well. But if you think about the elderly over 55s block that was built, they needed to put 106 money in, but because they're not building the play area or anything, obviously. But then that goes into the destination park on Burleyfield. So
yeah.
It doesn't come into us. It actually, this time, goes to another.
I'm not a borough councillor, doctor. I'm a borough councillor.
Now, look, you've got to talk to us because it's been recorded here.
So
I'm
it gets
not,
even
I'm
more
not,
confusing as well.
I'm not the borough councillor, doctor. I'm just clarifying that.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for that. Right, now I've got Gareth again.
I'd just like advice as to how I should view this figure, in these figures in 4.3. Are they larger than you'd like them to be, or should they be smaller? I know they're, you know, as a target, do you review the size of it and think to yourselves that if we were doing a good job, it would be less than that? I'm not... You know, can you give me some sort of feel as to how you view the size of that number?
Jack, can I answer this?
Yes. Hang on a minute. No, let the officer first.
Okay. So the bottom line is, this is just factual information about how much has been secured through a particular year, how much has been received by us, and then in terms of the project information, what's been spent. So the information there is factual. It's not a sort of a performance indicator as such, but clearly there are projects that we want to spend money on and deliver for our communities.
I suppose what I'm saying, Chairman, is, is it your view that action should be taken to flush that pipeline to get some of these projects out, or is it, are you comfortable with it that things are taking their natural course? I haven't got a feel for it, so that's why I'm asking.
I'm going to.
Should we look at this on a positive basis, or should we look at it with critical eyes? That's what I'm seeking advice.
Right, I'm going to bring Michelle in first before any of the cabinet members. Michelle.
Okay. So I've probably spent too much time hanging around planners, because there's more than one way to look at this. So the first way is, the more money we have, the better schemes we can deliver. So with the top quality equipment and all the whiz-bang stuff, I'm talking about play areas, you know, you can really go to town. What you haven't got here, and I think this is the point that Alex was making, you've got three figures that are fact. One is, this is unspent, this is allocated, this isn't allocated. But what it doesn't tell you is the information that Councillor Leeson was asking about, which is, well, how many wards are there within this? How many contributions make it up? So, for example, if someone said to me, you've got £3.2 million to do a play area, I would be cahooted because you could really go to town with that. But that's not what this is. This is a number of different projects. So to me, even if you had, say, five or six projects in there, and I'm sure, Alex, it's more than that, that's a good amount of money to be able to spend. What we've got to remember is that within the borough, we have schemes that range from the likes of the Wildwoods and the Charney Roads, where they are very large, major investment projects, down to the smaller parks that have had refurbs and everything in between. So my feeling, and I don't know how many projects that are in there, but I've got a feel that we're probably talking somewhere in the region of double figures-ish. That looks like a reasonable amount of money to be able to do an awful lot of good in a reasonable amount of time. So I'd be comfortable with, if that was staring at me saying spend me, I'd be quite comfortable with that.
I think that's the sort of answer I was hoping for. Because presumably, all of these numbers can be performance managed in some form or other,
yeah.
And some of them could be performance managed better than others.
Yeah.
And I'm just getting a feel of how you performance manage this
yeah.
whole area of 106.
There's a very blunt performance measure that we all love, which is how old is the money, and that's the one that we're more interested in. Because, as Alex said before, the 106 agreements give a period within which, from receipt, we need to spend the money. That is what we need to focus on to make sure we spend it in the right period. But in essence, the more money we have, as long as we have the projects to spend it on, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I understand.
Right, now I'm going to Councillor Beattie first, and then I'll come to you.
No, it's all been said now.
You've all been said, all right.
Forget it. I don't know why I can't talk on one.
Chairman, the point that Michelle just came to, finally, is a key point, because there is a time spending limit on Section 106 monies, and that's the thing that we need to keep our eye on always. It's great to have the money, it's great to think up the projects, but we actually need to get the projects delivered and the money spent, and it has to be spent within the 10-year period. And it's, I would say it's the job of the officers, but it's also our job as cabinet members to keep an eye on that, to see that the money
right.
is actually being spent within the period.
Can I just ask it?
No, don't interrupt.
And that takes us back to the way that we deal with applications in chronological order, which is one of the problems that members tend to come up with and say, there's a long time waiting for my project because it's 17th down the list or whatever. And those are the kind of issues that we're addressing at the moment.
Okay, thank you for that.
Can I just so, in your estimation or your view, how much of this money is at risk in the sense that
none
it's time limited?
None of it is at risk. It's all safe. It's all well within spending.
Thank you.
All right, now yeah.
It's all been said, Jack. Thank you.
Thank you.
You do realise that this 106 agreement comes under Alex and me, but you keep leaving me till last for some reason.
No, no. The point was, Michelle had spoken, and then it come that way. It is not deliberate. It's not deliberate. You want to see the list I've got down here. And the person, last person down here is Mrs. Barron.
Thank you, Jack. Well, that's been very enlightening. I must admit that we've learnt an awful lot about the 106 money. So I really do look forward to a meeting as the Bellway Development is in my ward.
Would you shout at us, please? Shout at us.
Did you not hear anything?
I heard something about a ward, but this machine is not picking it up, to my knowledge.
Yes.
Right, who's going to answer that?
Yes, we will be having meetings with the relevant board members to have them have a discussion about the relevant projects that align with the second legal agreement, and then when that will come forward. So yes, that will be taking place.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, you're happy with that?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, now that's all on page 4. That was page 4. Where are you now? 5? Page 5 then, Marnie.
Chairman. Did you put your hand up at some point to ask a question?
I did, but it's already been answered by Michelle. It's about...
Well, I'll come back to you in a minute.
So the 106 monies was to be spent within or for the benefit of the ward, but you answered that.
Okay, I did want to.
Right. Thank you for that, Marnie.
Thank you.
And then... Mark.
So, page 5, education. We had a recent development that I got very frustrated over, where the education provision was streamlined to purely primary school and not secondary school. Originally, we were supposed to be having money for secondary school placements, and then the developer did have enough money to put that 106 money towards that secondary provision. In the area that we're talking about, there is currently no provision for primary school places, so I understand that they've had to put money for that, for the new St Leonard's primary school that's going to be built in that area. But to have that removal of the secondary education funding when none of those children will have a secondary school to actually go to, because there isn't one that has the capacity to take those children, I don't understand why they were allowed to negotiate that and why that wasn't concreted into the 106 agreement, because it seemed within the planning application that it was taken out. I know that we've got the secondary school that's going to be built on Beacon side, but only if the money is there to do it. If we can't provide that money or give money towards that project. So why was that allowed to be removed, and what can we do to ensure that that doesn't happen in the future?
I'm a little bit disturbed about a particular project being talked about.
It was an example.
Yeah, as an example. But I'm going to say, who decides what area of education the money could be used for? Who makes that decision is the best way to put it.
So my understanding is that the county council does assessments and modelling in terms of the catchment areas for particular schools and the number of developments that come forward and how many children that will generate in 5 years' time. And then the county council will engage with the developers, both in terms of the primary and secondary school education provision, to see what the situation would be and the impact on a particular development coming forward, and then what section 106 contributions need to be made. So I'm sorry, I don't know about a particular example or a particular case, but it is the county council's role, as it is with transport, to negotiate with developers.
So it's out of our hands as the borough.
Yes.
Council, even though we get slaves.
Just tell them it's the county council, to set them off there.
Well, I did contact county council regarding this very same issue in actual fact, and it seems that in some situations it's more important to just some funding than no funding at all, which doesn't help us as an authority, unfortunately, does it?
Right. Now, as I said, we can't talk about specifics. We're talking about in general. All right? So you've answered that particular part.
Thank you.
All right? And I think the thing is, if there is something specific there, then maybe Alex has picked it up and we'll deal with it as a separate item to you.
We have to be careful in members' interests as well as we talk about.
association.
Yeah, I'll be careful with it. Yeah, I've just been asked to remind the members who are members of the county council that this is the borough.
Yeah.
All right, and we must deal with what is the borough, not the county. Okay. You have to shout at us.
Sorry, children grow up. Can I just add that children grow up from primary school children into secondary, it doesn't matter which area of the borough they live in. They grow up from primary school children into secondary school children. They need an education. They need those places.
Yeah. Well, as I said, we mustn't deal with individual places. We talked about this on a site visit. All right, Marnie, I've got you down. Question that is not
a
general question.
Yes.
And then I'm going to Mark.
If we have a planning application where there's an outline for a certain number of houses, and halfway through that house build, a housing company then put forward a change to that application for, say, another 75 houses, how does that affect the 106 money, and is it renegotiated?
Now they're deciding which one to answer the question, and this is interesting because we know where this came from. Right, who's going to answer the question?
Alex.
Right, go on then.
If it's an outline application, then it needs to have a preserve matters application that follows on, so actually to do for its implementation. If it's a full application, then obviously that's different. That can be implemented straight away. If full permission has been given by either of those routes, and then the development gets to a certain point, and then you said there's a change in terms of the number of houses then built on site, then my understanding is that would have to come back to the planning committee to look at the new application, the implications of that information, the viability of the evidence, etc., and then make a fresh decision, and that would obviously apply to any sort of section.
So would 106 be that would be
discussed
in the planning committee?
No. You said 106.
Effectively, planning application comes in, and if it's outline, then the Section 106 agreement will say we expect X amount of affordable houses per X amount of total houses that you do, and we expect X amount of money dependent on this many three beds, four beds. And at that point, if someone says to us, how much 106 money are we getting? We don't know, because we haven't got a definitive number of houses on the site. That comes through the reserve matters process. Once you've gone through reserve matters, you can then implement your permission, and that's when the triggers start to come through. If the developer then says, oh, actually, I've now got some land adjacent, or I want to change the density, they'll do another planning application. And part of that assessment process will be looking at planning obligations, and that's where you get things like deeds of variation. Mm-hmm. Whether it goes to planning committee or not very much depends on whether it was referred to planning committee in the first place. But the Section 106 won't be debated there. It's just the fact that there is one. But that's why sometimes when we have housing applications, it can get complicated, because we've got to go back and look at what were the original obligations, what's changed, what can we now add as new obligations, and where Alex's team have got the job that Exacom helps them with is Exacom will then go, that one, and that one are all the same site, make sure you monitor them all.
Right, thank you. Marnie?
Yes, that have occurred, so which makes it pretty complicated.
I was going to shout Mark Winnington. He knows why. Barney, are you still on the same? It's getting a bit long.
I think I have my question answered.
Okay then. Mark Winnington, you're down here.
Thank you. Right, this is cross portfolio, so don't fight, guys.
I never fight.
Let's deal with it. Come on.
Page 5, on that last 4.7. Highways, education, sports, recreation, fair enough. Cannock Chase, special area of conservation, and biodiversity. Now, the reason I mention those two is first of all, Cannock Chase presumably has got some specific 106 monies that go to them.
Yes, that's the final.
Yeah, am I correct in that? And then the second one is, am I right in thinking that developers have got to start and put some sort of monies into environmental compensation. So two questions there.
So in terms of the special area of conservation, every development that currently housing development, so residential development, that's currently built within 8 kilometres of the south boundary, needs to provide a contribution of about £158 per house, and that money is then used to mitigate the impact of recreational pressure on the Cannock Chase SAC.
Yeah.
So that's.
So every house within 8 kilometres.
8 kilometres at the moment.
That's
but from the 1st of April, it goes up to 15 kilometres, and every house within 15 kilometres has to pay a new charge of 215.
15, is it?
No, I'm trying to remember the exact figure. 298.58, I think it is.
Right.
For every single house that's built. And that money is then used to spend on those mitigation projects. The reason that the money's gone up and the zone's increased is because the number of houses that are being built is increasing across that area. So at the moment,
exactly,
the figures are based on the adopted plans that we've currently got in place. But we're now looking through to the plans that are going to be delivered by 2040, and that means that there's an increase in housing, so an increase in mitigation.
Sorry, right.
Carry on, Mark.
So 15 kilometres from where?
15 kilometres from the boundary of the Cannock Chase SAC areas, and there are 4 different land parcels that make up that area, so it's 15 kilometres from the boundary of the SAC.
Wow.
And the SAC sits
within. The richest residents we're going to have are going to be the adders and the. You have to work out the income on that. It's quite considerable. Who's the chair of the ANOB?
Can't think.
Well, just to clarify, the SAC partnership, the SAC area sits within the area of outstanding natural beauty, but we have our own joint strategic board, and the chair of that strategic board is Councillor Terry Mason from South Staffordshire. So each of the local authorities within that zone has a cabinet member that sits on that joint board and coordinates.
And the second question about the environmental charge. Is there an environmental charge as we go towards Elms and everything for each developer towards mitigating on environmental concerns?
Biodiversity.
Marnie, just a minute,
sorry,
I've got you.
Just to clarify, the bullet point on biodiversity is asking, is I think Mark's saying, is biodiversity part of the prescriptive requirements under Section 106?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is yes.
So what are we doing about it?
That's where we insist on green space, open spaces and all the rest of it.
Right.
Okay.
Just clarifying that one. I've got a slight problem. I thought that if a house builder was taking an area north of Stafford, that has got to be compensated elsewhere.
So I think you might be referring to the Environment Act that's just come in. And so at the moment, there's a consultation happening until the 4th of April on biodiversity net gain. So the government has come in and said that there needs to be a 10% biodiversity net gain provision.
That's the one.
Now, as Michelle mentioned earlier, that can happen on site. So the developer can do a little bit on site, or it can be on another piece of land that the developer secures that's off site. Or the final approach is that the money is then money is provided to Borough Council to then actually bring forward those biodiversity projects on land, on other lands where we team up with the Wildlife Trust, or we use our own land to enhance biodiversity, and that's through some biodiversity credits that is secured based on the DEFRA metric. So the developer will look at the area of land that they're going to put the houses and say, okay, it has a certain biodiversity value, and it provides a value to that metric.
Chair.
We can then calculate the uplift.
So, Chair, are we doing that?
No, this is the White Government white paper.
Right.
Chairman, what I was going to say is that I think most of us are anticipating the white paper will be enacted by the end of the year. So sometime next year, once it's in place, it may be an opportunity for this committee to have it on the agenda to begin to understand the implications, because they will be very, very important when they come in.
Yes, so Chair, could this committee have sides of the consultation?
It's there, it's on the web now.
Could you send us the links?
Yes.
Right then, those
who... You've even got to write a comment at the moment, Chairman.
Yes, okay. Now, I've got D, unless this is about
what the talk. No,
all right. You want to don't sit close to him next time. Marnie, this is it.
So the one relating really to what Mark's been discussing, I know that within our applications, these developers are working with our biodiversity officer already. And I know that in some cases there's been some fantastic planting, particularly in the wet areas. How are we going to be looking at increasing that then, if biodiversity is part of it? If we're already delivering this, how are we going to make it better?
Okay, so as Francis says, we've got this sort of 2-year window at the moment to look at how we implement the Environment Act and this 10% uplift in terms of biodiversity net gain. But what's really great is that Staffordshire is ahead of the game on this, so that all of the Staffordshire authorities have mapped what's called their nature recovery areas. So that's prepared across Staffordshire, so we know where the quality habitats are, we know the areas of opportunity, and in this next 2 years the requirements are that these local nature recovery strategies need to be prepared. So that will be a coordination across the Staffordshire authorities led by with people at Heritage Council to show what habitats we've got in lower quality and what we're going to do to actually improve them. And that will effectively set the benchmark in terms of then when developments come through and we're making sure that the biodiversity net gain 10% is delivered, it's within that coordinated approach of strategy. So it crosses over in terms of administrative boundaries to get the maximum benefit for biodiversity.
So, will we be able to make changes to applications of developments that maybe haven't begun to implement that, or will we be restricted to the agreement that's been made at the time?
It will just be on new applications coming through the system. It can't be retrofitted back on applications that have already been decided.
Right. He shook his head, so I should write it down.
And then, just to Carolyn, in actual fact, with regards to the playgrounds, you were saying about the fact that it's better to get the developers to build the playgrounds. So are we finding that it's costing, from a cost perspective, is it more value for money when they do it compared to when we build the equivalent play facility?
I can answer that.
It's your turn.
Thank you. I can answer that. Neither or. It's not more cost effective or less.
Yeah.
It's about it being in the right place, though, because then it's going on the site where the houses are being built, so they have to supply the green space. It's right on the doorstep of their development, so they plan it so much better to make the use of the area. So it just ticks every box for me where we can get the green space on site.
So are they spending the amount of
the same
facilities or better facilities for the money that they spend compared to the companies if we use an external company?
Now, can I stop you a minute? One, we're having a conversation across the table. We're having a conversation up here. Maybe they're getting bored over something. And I know that the looks on people's faces here. We don't have conversations across the table. We have conversations through me because this machine is picking up the voices. And this officer is right away. He's worn his fingers out. Right. Now,
he's not used to it.
The conversation then is about, was it best to have them build a park or we build a park?
I would still say them purely because it's on their land. But you don't get anything more, anything less. It's they will have a set criteria from the planning department what needs to be on that site. If it costs them more or less, that's irrelevant, as long as they are putting in what is requested to go on that site, and the area is the size that has been requested from the department. Sorry,
right.
No. Generally speaking, the larger developments will always have the on-site provision put in by the developer. The bit where Alex's team have to come into their own to spend the money is where we might have, I don't know, 14 or 15 houses where the money that's generated from the planning application isn't enough to build a park, but they can then say, well, we've got those 15 houses there, those 13 there, and those 12 there. If we add all that money together, we could do a lovely little park. It's all in the same ward, and that's where it comes into its own. But yeah, Karen's absolutely right. On site is right next to the development, so wherever we come.
Right, now I'm going to move on, because we've spent 1 hour and 25 minutes on this item, and we haven't finished yet. So, no, we haven't finished. We haven't finished. Page 7 is the diagram, the process. Do you want to talk us through that, Alex? No, everybody happy? Right. We're going over the page to page 8 and D. Got a hand up on page 8.
I just noticed as you go down, and it's just a survey of a ward member, in under 50,000, the local ward member is mentioned, but when you go to any development over 50,000, there's no mention. Is that deliberate, or are we being left out, or is that standard practice?
Can I just say that, Chum? At any big development, we would expect to have consultation on the planning aspects of that development, and usually you have public exhibitions and so on, and the ward members are always involved, whatever this thing says.
It's under consultation.
Yes. And it's mentioned in the word consultation, but it ought to be consultation with the public and ward members. You know, just enlarge it a little bit.
It wouldn't fit on the page, Chairman.
Sorry?
It wouldn't fit on the page, so.
Yeah, I noticed that, but I like. Okay, Councillor Strobridge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The main difference is, yes, absolutely the ward members involved every step of the way, but the main difference is it doesn't have to keep going backward and forward to Cabinet. That saves such a lot of time.
Okay. All right then, that's page 8. And we thank you for that. As I said, one of the longest we've done, and I didn't think it would last that long. Okay. So, are you going to disappear? They may have something else. Yeah. Oh, yes. There is bits. Okay then. I think Joe's telling you, not going home yet. All right, we're on to page 9, which is the quarter 3 performance reporting. Okay, I'm going to ask, it says Tracy,
You could take it page by
pardon?
Take it page by page.
We are going to take it page by page, sir. Here we go. Page 9. Anybody with a question on page 9? Over the page to page 10. And you see there about the development management team continue to deal with high numbers of incoming applications. All right, and additional staff are now trained for validation. Right, and on 5, business support continues during the quarter 3 with 8 new inquiries. Anybody got any questions there? Okay, we go over the page and we start on page, well, I'll call 11 out, very little on that. And we now go to 12, and this is Martina Manning. It's her work and it's all in place. We had this conversation earlier yesterday. I have to put my glasses on for this one. Okay. Now, has anybody got any questions on page 12?
Just a quick one.
Quick, Marnie,
sorry.
Then.
Just where it's mentioning that we've got a number of existing businesses and commercial premises retained. Target was 10. Is it 37 actual, 20 actual?
Quarter three is 28.
So quarter two, the target comes after the actual, so the target was 10 and there were actually 20, and in quarter three the target was 10 and there were actually 37. So that's good.
We're doing really, really well, Tim.
Yeah.
That's fantastic news.
Okay then.
Thank you.
Anything else? We're on to page 13. Any questions on page 13?
Just pleased to see that the Stafford Town Centre transformation programme is on track.
At the bottom, yes. Well, we may be talking about something a bit later. All right. Okay, over the page to 14. I've got to fiddle about with this. Right, 14. Okay. Any questions on 14?
Statements, Chairman, if that's possible.
Go on then.
I'm really pleased to see that we've got so many projects, but they're all either on track or completed, which I think, considering what the teams have all gone through, is pretty phenomenal to be at that.
This is a new word, on track. This is instead of the faces. All right.
I like the faces.
Yes, I know. A lot of people thought it. They may. It's when you've got a miserable face, you knew there was. You've got to ask the question. Right, D.
Thank you. 1.4.1. It said that there've been 8 new inquiries for businesses looking to relocate. One-to-one business support for a Walker, Rysor and Alpha to relocate to larger sites in the borough. Do you know where they've gone? Are they moving to the borough?
Rysor and Alpha are...
So they're over at Hickson, aren't they?
Yeah.
They moved within Hickson, aren't they?
But Alpha's also set up a new...
Just a minute. Ask a question. What's the question?
I'm just saying, Walcole and Stone.
Walcole Stone.
I just wondered where they've gone.
Alpha is interesting because they're at Hickson, but they've now got an outlet now into Stafford Town as well.
Mm-hmm. It's recorded. Now be careful, because that's something you must remember. You can slag each other off in Parliament, but not in this committee.
Chairman, can I also add that
our payments out, both the mandatory payments for businesses, have been absolutely excellent, and the discretionary payments that we've initiated ourselves. We've got another tranche of money that we've got to spend by the end of March, and it looks like we're going to spend pretty well all of that. All of that has propped up businesses that have had a tremendously hard time during COVID, and I do think it's made the difference between survival and not surviving for some of those businesses. And they're not all small, they're large businesses and small businesses.
Right.
And so the work that's been done by the officers here has been absolutely magnificent in making sure that that money gets spent.
Right. Well, that's Martini. Right, okay,
so that's
then.
That's the finance department
and
the
finance department involved. Right, and we go over the page to 15. 15, Mark.
Thank you. Two questions really about the first two items. The first question for me is, it's on track for the rural one, but it says it ends on in October 2021. So how can it be on track if it's ended? And if it has ended, why has it ended? Because we still need rural enterprise. That's the first one.
I think the honest answer to that is that that would have been the date that we were originally looking at for the business support payments, the grants that are referenced in the text box. And my guess is that we then were able to extend the payments that we were doing, and we needed to update the date, and we forgot. I think it's probably anything more complicated than that.
So,
the date should now
be
the end of March.
End of
March. Right, okay. Could we have clarification of that?
Yeah. All of the business support money has to be spent by the end of March, so that's what that will be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeremy, can I just add to that, actually? If we'll effectively need to have been allocated by the end of this month,
yeah,
because of the end of the financial year for the Borough Council, so we're very conscious of that, and our businesses have been identified to use the money.
Can I suggest to the Chair that if there's any spare monies, that there's a new scheme or something else happens after in the next fiscal year?
So we aren't expecting any more COVID business support grants. In the most recent tranche of money, we were asked to focus that on the hospitality sector because of the impact of the Omicron variant. So obviously if there is more announced, then we will look at that, but as it stands at the minute, we're not expecting any more.
Okay, Chair, and then the second point is support for facilitation of lifelong learning. Again, probably the same answer, but it's on track, but it finished on September 2021.
Yeah, we just need to refresh that. I was just going to explain as well, Chair, where it says no new HR1, so that's the form that has to be submitted to DWP when you are announcing a number of redundancies. So that's the thing that lets all the different partners know that actually we might need to offer some support here. And there haven't been any in the borough, which is fantastic.
Right, okay then. I've got D, then Marnie.
Thank you, Chair. Just to, given that it is public money, and obviously there's been a lot in the press recently about the money's not going where it should have been, how can we, what governance procedure, which committee or where does it go to know which businesses have collected it or had it?
So the payments that we've made have been split into two sections. So firstly there's the mandatory grant. So I think our total now is over £48 million. A massive chunk of that are the mandatory payments. So that's where the Chancellor will say there will be £6,000 to this type of business if they pay this amount of rates. And that apportions takes account of the vast majority of the monies. The discretionary payments, although it's discretionary, there were then a whole raft of things that we had to consider to make sure that we were focusing on the right businesses, and we've had lots of debate about which ones can be included and which ones can't, because each time a fund was announced, some businesses might not be covered. So that's where we tried to do a catch-all with a very sort of broad-reaching discretionary pot, which basically said, if you don't fit into any of these categories, and we can see that you've suffered a loss, will support you, and we've done a number of those. But the majority of them are dealt with under the additional restrictions grant policy, which was agreed between the head of development, the cabinet member for economic development and planning, and the cabinet member for resources, to make sure that the criteria were being met. And then on top of that, there's been extensive auditing done on payments. So there's lots of paper trails. Thank you.
All right, that it, Dee? Okay, Marnie?
Two questions, Chairman. The first one regarding the 1.4.3 and the rural businesses. Have we been dealing with companies that have come to us, or have we been then gone out searching for people that may not have been aware that they could claim?
Both. Yeah. So we had a number of businesses that we were expecting to hear from, and generally speaking, whenever funding was announced, before we knew the details of what we could pay and when, businesses quite rightly would already have been on the phone to us saying, what am I entitled to, so that's great. Where Martine and her team really came into their own was when they weren't getting contact from businesses they expected to hear from. What they've also done, spreadsheet after spreadsheet, of looking at, have we got everyone we should have had? Have we heard from all the way across the borough? So yeah, they have been very proactive in making sure that everyone's had what they're entitled to.
Can I come back through?
Right. Next question.
So we're looking at small home businesses as well as the larger businesses.
Yeah. So Francis has gone through every iteration of the policy on this. We've looked at people who were in rateable value. Commercial premises, people that weren't in rateable value, people that were in shared space, home workers, self-employed, taxi drivers, large companies, small companies,
micro businesses,
and basically what Martine's done is every time we've been given a direction that you must focus on these sectors or these sizes of companies, she's made sure that the next time, wherever we have any discretion, anyone that we know fell through the cracks, because there are some businesses that have said, can I apply, and we've had to say, sorry, not this time. We've carried that forward, and then as soon as there's something we can pay them on, we have done.
Okay, thank you.
The other thing, Chairman, just to add to that, is that it has given us the opportunity to build up a really substantial database of all the businesses of every kind and variety in the borough.
Yeah.
And our next task is going to be how to keep that up to date.
Right, that's it, Marnie.
No, that wasn't my second question.
Sorry, carry on.
So my second question was regarding the businesses who applied for the apprenticeship funding. Are these businesses, I don't know whether this is Jeremy's or yourselves, have these businesses, are they the expected applicants, or have we found that we've got some smaller businesses that have been taking on apprenticeships or apprentices as a result of this funding?
So last April we ring-fenced an amount of the discretionary money and said that we wanted to support the County Council with their, and I'm hoping that the county members will back me up when I say it's the Staffordshire Means Business Programme. Yeah. So they were basically, because the County Council didn't get any business support funding directly, so they said, look, we have teams that can help deliver on the skills agenda, apprenticeships being one. So we committed, I think it was about £202,000 towards county-led schemes. One was for training, the other was for apprenticeships. As I understand it, because obviously I don't have the detail because we're not delivering that strand, the demand has been high within Stafford. So through you, Chairman.
So do you think that some of that uptake has been because of COVID? We've got additional training, potential new workforce that might come through the ranks, but we're not paying a high wage for an additional employee. Are you finding that's what's happening?
It's probably a question for me to pose to colleagues in the county, because I would imagine they've got to do some kind of reflection on these businesses have funding, this is what happened with the apprenticeship, this is the benefit to their business. So I can see what feedback they've been getting. I think it's something that apprenticeships are difficult to come by, but it's actually National Apprenticeships Week this week. So it's a great thing to have been able to support because of COVID.
Small growth.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Now we move Andy.
No. Okay.
All right. Okay. So that's the rest of 15. All right. Over the page. We now move on to the budget, and we ask Joe to come to the table. All right.
Long way.
Okay then. Page 16, Joe.
Monitoring position, so this runs up to the 31st of December. And it covers the planning portfolio area. So the front page talks about, and the first two pages talk about the summary level. We follow on then to the detail of the individual areas within the planning portfolio and put a greater detail of the breakdown in terms of the variance analysis. And then the final page, you've got the capital programme. So if you want to go through and talk about specific questions, or do you want me to give you a quick run through?
All right, we'll do it page by page. Page 16, anybody got a question? Dee?
Thank you. Just to offset by, it says staffing variations. Is that unfilled vacancies?
So it's a mixture. So the majority of the offset by staffing variations tend to be salaries. The majority of that will be, but there will be some training, or some training budgets and a few other little bits and pieces, but that will be small elements. If you do, I'll put you up to the slightly higher figure up above those, so agency costs are offsetting most of those vacancies, so where we've not been able to recruit agents and staff people brought in to cover those vacancies, which obviously creates a budgetary pressure.
Okay, then now on page 17. All right, over the page. This is where the figures are all laid out. We start on page 18. Anybody got questions? Page 18. D again.
Going down to staffing variation 44k and then compensation payment. Is this the jumble stage? It's the second paragraph.
I don't believe it was. I think it was a compensation payment. Alex might be able to bring him in within the forward planning department. So the staffing variations, there is two staffing posts vacant. The compensation payment, I believe, is something completely different. Compensation. We can always come back to you with some clarification, but it's not to do with salaries, I don't think.
All right, would you tell us? You have to write to everybody, Joe. All right. Okay. There is an item on development management that may be answered. Agency costs, what does that mean?
Sorry, Chair, where are you looking?
It's mid of the page. It says agency costs.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Variations are offset by agency, so agency's been brought in, I think, to cover some of the vacancies which John currently has within his team. I mean, sure, Michelle can probably elaborate further.
Yes, so when John did the performance update on development management, he explained that we've had some vacancies that we were unable to fill because recruitment's just been really tricky during COVID. Obviously, we have a lot of work, so basically these are some of the planners that we recruit through agencies. It's an expensive way of doing it, but when you've got a vacancy and you've got a large amount of work, it's the only option we've got, really.
Okay, fair enough. Then we move on to page 19. Mark Winnington?
Chair, I was also on 18.
You're still on 18?
Yeah.
Go on then. Sorry about that.
It's just the land charges. Can you explain it says reduce search fee costs and then there's a loss thing as well, isn't there? Or am I wrong on that?
Through your chair, so the reduced search fees are a reduction in the actual cost that we're obviously incurring. I think there's a change, isn't there, in the way for the land charges?
Yes, we have to raise them and the government takes money.
Yes, so with the land charges fees, they have to be set on a cost recovery basis. So a few years ago when we went through a system change, that meant that there was a lot less manual work, which meant that the time you spend on each search is less. So we then amended the fees to reflect that, but obviously that means you get less income coming in. The number of searches has been very high. Other than a short period during the first lockdown where people legally weren't allowed to view properties, that the numbers of searches coming in have been consistently high.
What I would say is the expenditure is almost offset by the income, loss of income, so you reduce search for the expenditure, but you've got reduction in your income as well, so it kind of balances out to within 6k.
So this thing about the government, where does that fall into this calculation?
So the land registry, there's a national programme to basically take part of the land charges search process out of local authorities and put it into land registry. It's only the bit that searches the register. So when you buy a house, your solicitor can also ask lots of additional questions and ask about planning permissions and building control and all that. So that part of it stays with borough councils and district councils. The bit about maintaining the register and basically looking at what charges there are on the property, that will go to land registry, but we don't have a date yet for when that will transfer across to Stafford.
Right, just for committee's input, we moan about possibly a long time with our planning department. I've had land registry search going on for 18 months now, so make sure you guys look swift.
Okay.
Like
right.
Going
now, that was yours, Mark.
Yes, thank you.
That was yours, right, Marty? Marty? Mrs.
Yeah.
Councillor Phillips.
compensation payments of the 11k.
I'll just say that one.
I obviously must have just...
Yeah, through your chair, I'll clarify that and I'll send the response to that.
Okay.
Circulate it round to everyone.
Thank you.
All right then. Okay, we'll go on to page 19. Anybody question on 19?
No.
There is a question that I will ask, because I asked this before. That general car parking charge, all right? Because we had this rather strange pre-meeting because my machine's collapsed. The 337k is on all the general car parks.
All the general car parks, yes, Chair, including the waterfront and riverside. So that covers your Doxy Road, Gow Street, and various other different car parks.
Right. And in addition, we lost an income of 147k on the waterfront.
Correct, sir.
And we also lost an additional 169 on Riverside.
Yeah, that's the forecast so far based on current trajectories we've seen in 2019. So obviously last year was a very different year. But obviously that's because of the current, recent work from home mandate still, and the lag with COVID, the leftovers across is still not 100% back in the offices generally across the working.
Yeah. And of course, this was mentioned in the budget as well. Okay, Dean.
Yeah, can I ask, have you been fully compensated at the borough? The government very clearly and made a big song and dance about it that everybody will be fully compensated for the losses. Have you received the full compensation?
So the compensation agreement with the government ran out in the first quarter. So after that, subsequently, we've obviously been having losses.
Yeah.
And it was 75p in every pound, so it wasn't a full 100% return.
Thank you.
All right, so, yeah.
Can I just
Mark?
Follow on a little bit? Because it's quite interesting that the impact of the car parking charges. Have you any sort of plan to try and get people to park or find a way of doing this? I mean, I totally get the working from home bit, because not being rude, but both councils, the buildings, it's a tumbleweed moment when you walk into them. So, and I don't think that 5 day a week working will ever come back. So have we a plan to try and mitigate against this loss of income?
So
So as far as the working from home mandates go, obviously while they were in place, there was literally nothing we could do because we couldn't be encouraging people to be coming in when the general advice was to stay at home. I think where we're at now, and it comes, I think it comes a little bit later where we talk about the, or it might, we've already gone past it, the strategic parking study that we're doing. One of the things we want to understand is, what are people looking for in terms of parking passes now? So I think the days of the 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, that's not the only offer on the table anymore. But what we've got to understand is if we change the way in which we look at parking charges, you've got to understand what the impact then is on income. And it's what has the greater impact? Offering more choice that people then don't park as often because they're not coming in, or don't offer choice that people then don't want to park because it's expensive and they're not going to use it all the time. So it's a really tricky thing to try and balance. In terms of getting people back into the town centre more generally, that's all wrapped up with the town centre transformation stuff, where it will basically be a natural byproduct of regeneration.
Can I make a comment on the car parking? This building, if you try to park under this building late at night, no chance. Because this building is now, the car parks around here are now used by the people going to the cinema. And they're full. I can tell you that on two occasions I've had to come down here at 8 o'clock and reverse off. Drop the passengers off and then reverse out because there was nowhere I could park up. I had to go and find somewhere else. Home. And abandon the passengers.
One of the things we are trying to do is to grow our evening economy. We talk about the nighttime economy, which is the nightclubs and so on. But what we really are hoping to do, and the High Street Fund project hopefully will help, is to bring people in the evenings or to stay in a bit after work, because that extends the use of the car parks, but it also brings the town back to life. And the other part of that is the increase in the residential use of the town, which will make a huge difference, I think. And there won't be enough parking for everybody's visitors, and so these car parks are going to be needed.
Right. Okay, then. We're on page 19. I've got Andy.
Same old thing, the Gypsy and Travellers Act.
Shout again.
Traveller and the Gypsy
We haven't got to that yet, have we?
Yes, on the notes on page, sorry.
No, we're not there yet. It's over the page. Yeah, it's page 20 now. Okay.
What, 20 now?
20 it is, the Gypsy Travellers site.
I was counting how many years this has been on the sheet, and nothing has been done. We're not kept up to date. What actions are we taking about Gypsy and Travellers? This has been something like 15 years on this.
Could I reply first, Chairman?
Just a moment. Let me say, I'm going to keep quiet because I do know something. All right? Well, and I've got an idea, it may have been mentioned before, but Councillor?
What I would very much like, and I put it to every member here and every member of the council, is that ward members come forward with suitable sites. That's what we need.
It isn't the ward member's job to do so.
Of course it is. Every site that is identified, there will be huge resistance to it, and the ward member will be joining that resistance. It's our job to find the sites in conjunction with the officers.
But then, we've got one now at Spotacre that's been there 15 years and we've done nothing whatsoever about it. They made the right budget of.
Chairman, that's totally incorrect.
Can I just say that as this is a recorded meeting, we ought to be really careful about being specific.
Yes, I. And this is where, again, we're at that point. You have to be careful, because it is recorded. Now, let me say this. The Gypsy and Traveller site business is, they are looking for sites.
Yeah.
And Michelle will tell you something.
So, the
point you made that nothing is being done, I challenge that. Something is being done. What we're talking about, is there any availability of a suitable site? And to this point in time, no, there isn't. But this isn't just a case of finding a piece of land that is of a certain size. We have a set of criteria that we, a group of officers from within the council, there's about five of us, we look through, are there any planning constraints on the site? So is it in accordance with planning policies? Then we have to look at things like, is it in a flood risk area? Would you be able to get a vehicular access to it? We're then looking at things like, would you be able to get utilities to the site? Is the site affordable? Is the site deliverable? That's an awful lot of requirements when there aren't many sites that come available, which is why I would reiterate my cabinet member's request that if anybody becomes aware of a site that could potentially be viable, please let me know and we'll assess it. Other ward members have put sites forward to us before and we have carried out those assessments. We have a rolling programme of checking auction sites to see what's available. If the land isn't there, we can't buy it.
Right.
Well, our friends normally can find sites that we can't.
I have to say that the site you were talking about, we know it is a site that is complained about many times by the councillor that represents it. But
yeah.
I have to say there is a site in Common Ward, there is a site in Coton Ward, which was Foregate, all right? They are there. They've been established, and they're well established. And I do know, because I asked this question some time ago, the officers actually found a site. They found a site. They were about to go in and get it, and it then went to auction, and they got outbid. So I do know that they are trying to sort it out. I know it's frustrating. I know it's frustrating to a councillor if you know they've got a problem in their ward. And let me say this to you, that being the longest serving councillor now on this council, I have known about this in top end of Manor. I've known about it in the top end of Common, about groups of travellers who were there, and they were there for years until we decided to do something in the town centre, and we have problems with the same sort of families because they are in this town and they are well established. They've been here a lot longer than I have, I can tell you that much. But the point is this, we have got two sites and we're looking for more. And that ought to be understood. It is a problem for this council to deal with it. And they are working on it. But the one individual site you were talking about, I know it's a problem for the councillor that's involved, and there's very little we can do.
There are other issues with that. Which he's got to be resolved in some way.
Yeah. I think we should listen, all right?
Can we just close that part?
Yeah, close that one down. That's okay, you're on this page.
Yeah.
We're not talking about Gypsy Caravan sites.
I just wanted to ask a question, actually. Many, many years ago, I remember being on the planning committee on St Albans Road, around where the Catherine House. What happened to that? That was going to be.
It's been delivered.
But as part of our requirements for 5-year supply, so you know how we have to have a housing 5-year supply, we have to have something similar for gypsy pitches, and the number that we have, we need more pitches. It's as simple as that. So we'll never kind of, it's a bit like people say, when are you going to stop building houses? Well, we always need to have a 5-year supply. It's the same position with the gypsy pitches.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
So I have two questions. The one is on the subject that we're on at the moment, and the next is about the town centre enhancements. From the perspective of the Gypsy Traveller site, what type of sites are you looking as far as identifying them, what's the criteria?
So essentially, we would ideally be looking for something relatively flat and not in a flood zone, because this type of accommodation is more vulnerable.
Yeah.
Something preferably that is already with an access onto a major highway, if not, is capable of getting onto a major highway. And preferably something that has development somewhere near it, so that utility providers are already in place, and it's a case of extending connections rather than having to have extensive new connections, because that all adds up to the cost.
Through you, Chairman. So are we looking for brownfield sites already, developed?
Potentially. It depends on the location site. So it's slightly different from a gypsum travel site than for a housing site. So there isn't a policy in Alex's plan that says you can't have something what John will call in the open countryside. That's okay with a gypsum travel site. The problem you have with the open countryside is there probably aren't any utilities or roads or all the rest of it. We've also got to think about the families that potentially would live there. So can they access schools, for example? So it's all those kinds of considerations. A site with hard standing wouldn't necessarily be a problem, because that means that we don't then need to prepare the site, but it depends what uses there are around it. And when you get hard standing on a site, it could be that there's an industrial use. Is that appropriate next to a residential site? So it is quite...
Right.
Chairman, can I just say that for members' benefit, there is a government guide, Alex will probably send you the link to that, which is extremely helpful. Is particularly useful, I think, for planning committees.
Thank you. That would be helpful. My second question, Chairman. 19,000 for the town centre enhancement. I know that. I'm assuming is that being held to one side for the town centre improvement?
As I understand it, Joe, this was the balance that was left over from when we did the improvements to the signage, so the finger post signs and whatnot. We had some money left over, so rather than spend a small amount on a small amount of works, if we put this into a larger pot, we can do a bit more.
All right. Okay, then. All right. On page 20.
Yeah.
D?
Thank you, Chair. Just going back, I'm sorry, to the Gypsy Traveller site, it's 150,000 that's been added. Given the rising cost of land, particularly in Suffolk at the moment, is that actually enough?
So the site that Chairman talked about before, that would have been enough money to purchase that site. What we do have to be mindful of is that it needs to be enough to purchase it and then get it ready,
exactly.
Which is why, if we're close to utilities and all the rest of it, it keeps those costs down. But yeah, at the moment, we're okay with that. I think the other point is, and Alex will correct me if I get this wrong, we're not looking at a specific bit of the borough, it is anywhere within the borough. Is that right, Alex?
No, except the AOMB.
Yeah.
We prefer to avoid sort of national designations.
Yeah.
But generally, no, it's either greenfield or brownfield. There's a list of criteria in the adopted plan that sort of sets out what planning officers will consider when
a site comes forward.
I just
wondered if that was enough, and if you've got permission to that, because obviously everything is.
And Chairman, can I add to that? That's also the green belt.
Yeah.
Right. And did you?
No.
You're all right.
Yeah,
Mark?
Just very quickly, I would tend to go on. I didn't realise it was actually site readying as well, because to put utilities in, and I've just done some for barn conversions, it's 28k just for a transformer and a few cables. I think that's the 150 is hopeful,
which is why we're over
here. Right, okay then. Now that was page 20. We're moving over onto the work the work program, and this is where Andy comes into his own, because he delivers this and talk about it.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, the work programme is listed on the appendix that starts on page 23, and you'll see it carries us through right the way and through till March 2023. Happy to discuss any items that are on there insofar as we can and sit in the open agenda.
Right, now, I'll remind you that this work programme is owned by all members of the scrutiny committee, and it's flexible to allow the committee to react to urgent items, and it can as the aspects of overview and scrutiny. And I want you to remember that. If you think there's something that should be put on the agenda, so it should be put on the agenda. Right, now that's the end of the open session. What I'm going to have to do is to ask Andrew to read out the relevant paragraph about a confidential matter, because I want to talk about something.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, the committee needs to move under Schedule 12A of the Local Government Act 1972 as amended, particularly in relation to paragraph 3. And if the committee are agreed, then I will stop the recording and ask any members of the public and press to leave.
Is that agreed?
Agreed.
Agreed.